Thank you.
So, all right, my name's Rhonda Wright, and I'm a drug addict. I'm definitely a cocaine addict. I'm not used to stuff like this. I'm a junkie from the South Phoenix, you know, I'm used to living on the streets, and I'm not used to being up here. You noticed when I came in, I was sitting down here because I wanted to be with you, you know what I mean? So I'm going to move around a lot, and I'm going to pull this board over here into the middle of the room, so I don't know if the ones on the end are quite going to be able to see it, so you can make your own decision as to if you want to move over or not. First off, I really want to thank Cause Sweden, because this is a phenomenal event. This freaking really has. I'm from America. We go to conventions every year. But this event has set the bar. You know what I mean? I love my people and everything, but now after being here, we're looking a little lazy. So you really have set the bar. I'm really grateful I got to be here. Thank you all so much. You've made all of us feel very warm, very welcome, and very much a part of. Right? Okay, so like she said, this workshop's going to be about powerlessness, right? Now, for those of you that are interested, everything that we're going to do here today are on these two sheets of paper. After this is done, after it's been presented, if you're interested in taking it with you, you can just come up here and take a piece with you. Take one each of the pages with you, okay? So you can still take notes if you want, but it's all written down right here, okay? So we're going to talk about powerlessness. Now, I don't know if any of you are like me, but have any of you experienced powerlessness? Yeah? A couple of you? All right. All right, so what I want to do is, if I could get a couple people maybe just to raise your hand and tell me about what powerless is to you. Any volunteers? Talk to me about powerless. Okay. Okay. Does somebody else? Okay. Okay. Go ahead. All right. Anybody else? Okay. So here's the thing. A lot of you probably haven't said anything, but you all have your own experience in powerlessness. Sometimes we can put that into words. Sometimes it's just what's going on inside of us, right? And we don't even know how to identify it, right? And to put it into words is sometimes very difficult, right? But we know we have it. We know we're there. You know, we're in it. You know, I am a very good drug addict. This workshop that I'm about to present with you, I went somewhere, they were doing it at a convention, and I stole it. Because I wanted it. Right? So I took it, and I called it mine. You know, and I've been using it and sharing it and working with my sponsees, because here's what this thing did for me. I had my own experience with powerlessness when I came into these rooms. I am not the drug addict that identified powerlessness out on the street. That, you know, maybe you are, and if that works for you, then okay. But for me, my powerlessness happened right here in these rooms. Okay? When I was about 60 days sober, and I didn't have drugs or alcohol to deal with me. Okay? The stuff that was going on inside of me, right? I needed drugs or alcohol to deal with the stuff that was inside of me. And when I got here and I was removed from drugs and alcohol, the stuff inside of me was still there. And so I didn't have my solution, right? Because for me, the drugs and the alcohol were the solution. They were not the problem, right? Okay, sure. Okay, so the drugs and the alcohol were my solution. So when I was out on the street and I had drugs, I had power, right? I come into these rooms, they're telling me I can't get loaded no more. I don't know how to live like that, right? So I got all this stuff going on inside of me, and I can't get okay, right? And for me, that powerlessness was when I identified what being an addict meant to me. It meant I was going to die, right? I was going to die, and there was nothing I could do about it because I couldn't stop, I couldn't control it, and I couldn't moderate. I had tried to do those things, and I could not. So that meant that I was going to get loaded again. I didn't want to, but it meant that I would. And that meant that I was going to die. Because the book tells me to drink is to die. Right? And so now I'm scared. Right? I'm scared I'm going to die and there's nothing I can do about it. Right? I have that desperation of that drowning man. And I'm going to die and I'm freaking scared. And I can't do anything. Right? I can't do anything. I don't know how to live without drugs. I don't know how to live with drugs. I don't know how to like you. I don't know how to like me. I'm absolutely powerless in this. I'm stuck in fear, and I'm going to die. Right? So that's how it was for me in the beginning. You know? That's where my willingness came from. You know? So later, though, after I come into these rooms, I have the desperation of a drowning man. I start working my steps, right? And I start helping others, and I start being of service, and I'm all about it, you know? But about 8 years later, right, I don't have desperation, right? Somehow I think I got some power, right? And I go to this other convention. And these people do this that I'm about to do for you. And it reminded me, I'm here 16 years sober because I'm powerless. Still, I have power to live life, right? But I am powerless over drugs and alcohol, right? I come from that state of hopelessness, you know? And the next time I get loaded is just as far away for me as it is for you. It's arm's reach away. Right? So it doesn't matter if you're 30 days, 60 days, 100 days, you know. It doesn't matter if you're 10 years sober. The next time we get loaded is an arm's reach away. Right? So anyway, I go to this workshop, and they present this to me, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. That's what powerless is. So what this workshop is about, and what I hope that you walk out of here with, is you get to see. Not know or feel only, but also see what powerlessness looks like. Okay? So I'm going to bring the board over here. One thing I'm going to do as I start this workshop is I want to apologize in advance. I'm not an artist. I can barely write my name. Okay. So I will try to slow down and write so that you can read it, because I don't usually do that. And I'm, like I said, not very good at drawing, but you guys, oh, can you even see that? Do you have fat markers? Oh, okay. Me, okay? Just stick man. I was skinny when I got here. Okay. So, this is the addict. Dad. Okay. So this is not only me, this is you, right? We come into these rooms, we pick up these books, we start talking to other people, and they talk to us about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. How many have ever heard of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, that's good. Yes. All right. You'd be surprised how many places I go and they've never heard of it. Okay. So we start reading the book, right? And there's a chapter in the book called Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism. And it tells us in that most of us have been unwilling to admit that we are real alcoholics or addicts, right? We try not to be. We don't want to be. Who wants to be, right? And so one of the things that we learn in the book is that there's three parts to this disease, yeah? Thank you. Maybe that'll show up a little better. Okay. So the addict is here, and the disease, the book tells us that this disease centers where? In our mind, right? So the disease that centers in our mind, and the disease that centers in our mind, it tells us more and more about alcoholism. It tells us, yeah, my heroes, right? No one likes to think that he's bodily or mentally different than his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink or use like other people. The idea, what is the idea that I'm about to share? Anybody know? I'm about to talk about the obsession. Okay? So how many of you understand or identify with the obsession? That's good. Okay, so there's a lot of different definitions for the obsession. A lot of people, the way you may explain it or understand it might be different than you. What I want to say is there's no wrong way. Identify it with however you need to identify with it, right? What works for you? How can you understand it? Find that path, find that way, right? Because we all have that obsession, okay? The definition that I like to use, obsession is a reoccurring thought that does not respond to reason. Okay? A reoccurring thought that does not respond to reason. Because we know that getting high is not a good idea, right? We know that we shouldn't be getting loaded. We know that it's bad for our family. We know that it could kill us. We know that we're not going to make that appointment if we stay here getting high. We know those things, right? And in most areas of our life, we can find reason. But when it comes to drug addiction, it doesn't respond to reason. It just doesn't. The thought keeps coming, and it does not respond to reason, right? And so this tells us the idea somehow, someday, that he will, what is the obsession? Control and enjoy, right? So the obsession is that somehow, someday, spinning around in our mind, is that we will control or enjoy, right? I can do it different this time, right? It's not like I'm going to get loaded all the time again. I'm just going to a party, right? I got this. I'm just going to drink a little, right? And so this is always spinning around in the back of my mind. And by the time this drug addict comes into these rooms, I'm dying inside. Right? I'm separated from my drugs and alcohol now, and I don't know how to live life, and I'm struggling, and in the back of my head, I think I need my solution. Right? I need the drugs because I can do it different. I can control it. I can enjoy it. It's just going to be a party. And it's always in my head. Right? It's always spinning around in the back of my head. Now, reason in the front of my head says, no, you shouldn't do that. But the obsession says, yeah, you can. It'll be different. You know, I promise you. Go ahead. Just do a little, right? Maybe just snort it and it'll stick a needle in your arm, right? And so that spins around in the back of my head. So I'm in here. I'm white-knuckling it. I'm holding on. I'm trying not to get loaded. In the back of my head, it says, get loaded, get loaded, get loaded. You need your solution. Go get loaded. And I'm holding on, and I'm trying not to get loaded. And I sit here in that, right? And sometimes the people about me can tell. But other times, I'm a very good actor, and it's going on inside of me, and I can't freaking stand it, and I'm uncomfortable in my own skin, and I'm stuck in it, and my head is loud, and the obsession is loud, right? And then it says, the persistence of this illusion, the fact that this is a solution, is an illusion, right? The persistence of this illusion is astonishing, and many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. right? To drink is to die. You know what I mean? So we go on, and what happens in the doctor's opinion is the next part we're going to talk about, because we got some mental, this is going to be the mental part of this disease, okay? Well, there's another part of this disease, right? The physical part. Okay? And when we talk about the physical part, in the doctor's opinion, it gives us some very good information, right? In the doctor's opinion, it says, we believe, so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy. What does that even mean? Right? I'm a freaking junkie from South Phoenix. What do you mean I got an allergy? Right? I don't get that. That don't make no sense to me. I got a drug problem. What do you mean I got an allergy? Right? Well, it goes on to say the physical part of this is the allergy, right? And so what happens? How does it become the allergy? How does that become physical? We put it into our system, right? And as with any other allergy, you know, if you're allergic to strawberries and you come in contact with strawberries, you're going to have an abnormal reaction. So the allergy is an abnormal reaction. It's an abnormal reaction that other people don't have. See, this guy here can eat strawberries all day long and you can't, right? And so only the people with the allergy have the allergic reaction, okay? And as drugs and alcohol, well, the doctor tries to explain, with drugs and alcohol, the doctor tries to explain to us that what we have is an allergy. And if we take drugs or alcohol into our system in any form at all, pills, marijuana, tequila, cocaine, whatever your thing is, you take it into your system, you have an abnormal reaction, right? So the physical part of this disease is we take the drugs or the alcohol, we put it into the system, and it kicks off the allergy, right? And with every allergy, there's the allergic reaction, okay? Now, for the drug addict, what is the allergic reaction? I'm not going to write it out because I'm not smart like that, but we're going to put phenom, of craving, okay? And this craving becomes so powerful, paramount to anything else, right? So the drug addict has the idea, the obsession spinning around in the back of their head. They're white knuckling. They're trying not to get loaded, right? They're trying not to. This is still there. It's always there. It's there when they're sad. It's there when they're mad. It's there when they're hungry. It's there. It's always there, right? And they're doing the very best they can to not give in to that, right? But it's always there. And when it's always there, There's no rest. There's no separation. It's a part of who you are. It goes everywhere you go. It's been to every meeting you've ever been to. Right? It knows every weakness you've ever had. It knows your fears. It knows your insecurities. It's always in the back of your head, you know? Just one hit. Just one. It'll be okay. Right? So it's always a part of me. When I am new and I come into these rooms, the obsession has always been a part of me, you know, until I do the work. Right? But in the beginning, it's always there. So we have this phenomenon of craving going on. And it goes on to tell us in here, the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Once having formed the habit, they found they cannot break it. Once having lost their self-confidence. How many of you came into these rooms with all kinds of self-confidence? Huh? You had a bunch of self-confidence today? Because I didn't have any. Okay? It says, it goes on to say, no self-esteem. We didn't have any of that stuff. When I had self-confidence, I didn't have any self-esteem. I didn't have any self-respect. I didn't have any of that stuff when I got here, right? So it says their reliance, they've lost their reliance upon things human. Their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Okay? So we have our drug addict. We have our obsession spinning around in our head, right? It's always there, it's always there, it's always there. And then what happens? We give in, right? And we use. So we give in, we put the drugs or alcohol into our system, it kicks off the allergic reaction, We now have the phenomenon of craving, right? And so we have to have more, right? We have to have more. And what happens when we start using? Can't stop, right? I can't stop. And I don't know about you guys, but I party till I'm homeless, right? I mean, I party and I party and I party until something else stops me. I don't stop myself, right? But through the course of using and using and using, some things happen, right? We're going to call them consequences, because if you do drugs and alcohol long enough, you have consequences, right? So there's things like I lose my family, right? Who else has an example of something that happens as you continue to lose? Jobs? Poor health? Okay. Jails? Hospitals? Right? These things all start happening, and there's many more. We could go on forever, right? So what happens is we got a drug addict with an obsession in his head. He gives into the obsession. It kicks off the allergic reaction. It has the phenomenon of craving. Then all these consequences start happening. These are consequences, right? Does that stop us? I'm a drug addict, right? It's barely a bump in the road, you know? And what happens is I start using and I don't stop using and I can't stop using and my whole world falls apart and I keep on using because now I think I'm using to deal with what's going on around me because I'm always making excuses for why I'm using, you know what I mean? And so this stuff just spins around and it's always right here. And so I'm trapped like here so far. I'm stuck. I'm stuck in this. And if you're a drug addict like me, like I had previously mentioned, I don't stop. Something has to stop me. Right? Something else has to stop me because on my own power, I can't do it. Right? So it's usually the hospital stops me for a minute, but jail usually stops me for while I'm there. And so I have this moment where I am stopped. Okay? And like I said, this is going to look really sloppy. I'm sorry. It's better on paper. I'm stopped. Now I have this brief moment where I'm stopped. Okay? So, out of the big book again, every time I go back to this paper, I'm quoting stuff out of the big book. So if you're wondering where this information comes from, it comes from your book, okay? So, it says, frothy emotional pill seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcohol people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their life. All these and many others have but one symptom in common. They cannot start without developing the phenomenon of craving. The phenomenon, as we suggested, may be the manifestation of allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a complete entity. There has never been, by any treatment which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Okay, so I'm stopped, right? But for the drug addict, I don't know if you're like me, but when I'm an untreated addict, I'm feeling some kind of way, right? I'm a drug addict without drugs, right? I am not skipping through rainbows and daisies. You know, I am not happy to see you. You know what I mean? This is not freaking okay. You know, that's where I'm at with this, right? So now I'm stopped. And what happens when we're stopped? Okay, we have the mental, the physical, and now we're going to talk about the spiritual part of this. Spiritual part of this, right? We're stopped and we're stopped and we're uncomfortable and we're angry and we're not. What happens when we don't have drugs? We get restless, irritable, and discontent, right? And what does that look like for a drug addict? I'm angry. I'm depressed. Self-pity, right? I have all this stuff, right? I can't stand it. I'm so uncomfortable in my own skin that my skin's crawling, right? I'm so uncomfortable in my own skin. I cannot stand it. The anxiety is through the roof, right? And I know it doesn't matter what I know. I know that it's the right thing not to get loaded. I know that now I'm stopped. I should stay stopped. But what I know about me doesn't freaking matter. Right? Because we're talking about what's happening here, and this is the spiritual part. See, deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Okay? Now, whether that's this God, that God, a God, whatever God, multiple gods, doesn't matter to me. But deep down inside of every one of us, we understand what the idea of God means. Right? And what happens through our addiction, right, is that deep down inside of every man, woman, child is the fundamental idea of God. But I stuff pain, and I stuff shame, and I stuff guilt, and I put all this crap between me and God. And my spiritual connection gets broken. Right? It gets broken. And then I'm back to being me. I'm back to being angry and depressed and self-pity and self-loathing and all these other things, and I can't freaking stand it, right? I can't freaking stand it. So I'm here. I've been stopped. I'm trying to stay stopped. I'm white-knuckling through this. Do the very best of my ability, but then all this shit starts happening, and I can't stand it. I can't do this. This is why I got loaded to start with. Because I can't do this. I can't. Right? So then what happens is, let me see. Then what happens next is we got all this stuff going on right here, right? And we go up here. And then there's another part. It tells us men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after time, differentiate the true from the false, right? So I don't know about you, but this is my truth. This is what partying looks like for me, right? There's not a good time in there, right? But that's what the truth is. But what happens is when this starts happening, I start doing some dumb shit. I get back up here into the mental part of it, right? And I start doing things like, it wasn't that bad. That guy's the problem. I'm staying away from that guy. The guy is the problem. Right? You know, I've never really had a problem with alcohol. Alcohol's not my drug of choice. Not a drug at all, is it? It's legal. Right? So I got all this going on. Can't stand life. And I start thinking some dumb shit. Right? But the problem isn't that I think that. The problem is that I believe that. You see? I believe it wasn't that bad. I believe I can do it different. I believe it. Right? I know I shouldn't, but I can do it different. Right? It won't be like last time. It won't, right? So now I got this stuff controlling and enjoying, spinning around back in the head again. So now I'm back into my obsession. And you see what happens. It spins around in the back of my head. It spins around in the back of my head. This time it'll be different. I can control or enjoy it. I can control or enjoy it. I'm trying not to do it. I'm not going to do it. And then I freaking do it again. And then I do it, and it kicks off the physical allergy. And now I have the phenomenon of craving. And then I party till I'm homeless. Right? And then something stops me. Right? And then the spiritual malady takes a hold. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, and I stay in this as long as I can stay in it until I can't stay in it anymore, and I start believing some dumb shit again. And then I give in again, and then I do it again, and then I do it again, and then I do it again. And this vicious cycle becomes my life, right? How many of you can identify? Okay. So you see the addict that's trapped. Trapped in the middle of this vicious cycle, right? That's what happens to us. That's what happens to me. It goes on to tell me when we were talking about not being able to differentiate the true from the false, this is my truth, this is my false, right? I can't tell the difference. I can't tell the difference anymore, right? It goes on to tell me that we are restless, irritable, and discontent unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks that they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through their well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to do it again. I'm not going to do it again. I'm done. This is the last time I'm going to get to this place. I'm not going to do this again. And I mean that. I mean it with everything I have in me. I'm done. Right? Freaking done. Right? This is repeated over and over. Unless the person can again experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope for his recovery. Psychic change? What the hell are they talking about? Psychic change. Right? I'm a junkie from the streets. What does psychic change mean to me? You know what I mean? Well, the psychic change is where your thinking changes, right? So my sponsor had to dumb it down for me. I didn't understand, you know what I mean? And so she had told me, I just need to practice and learn to change my thinking. Okay, how do you do that? I don't know how to do any of that, right? So we're trapped in this circle, and I don't know if you're an addict like me, but if you said you identified, then you understand what it's like to be stuck in this circle. And what happens when we're trapped in this circle, there's no doors. There's no way out. I don't see a way out. I don't know a way out. Right? That's what trapped means. I can't find my way out. Right? And so they're telling me I need to change my thinking. I don't know how to change my thinking because when I start thinking, this is what I think, you know. You know what I mean? Like, change it. Oh, don't think like that. Okay. It seemed very strange when I got here. I didn't understand a lot. I still barely understand anything. But anyway, so I started thinking I'm supposed to think differently. And what I'm thinking is that this is my life. And you're telling me to just live some other way. And I don't know how. I don't know how. Right? So that's where this program saved my life. Right? Because I'm trapped. I'm going to freaking die in here. I'm going to die. I'm back to that powerlessness, right? I'm in that spot where I can't live in my own skin. I can't do it. But I've been here enough to know that I believe you guys. I believe to drink is to die. So I don't want to use, but I'm going to use because I can't stop using and I can't crawl out of my skin, so I don't know how to live in my skin, right? And since there appears to be no way out, right? The cool thing about these rooms is that not knowing, living that desperation of the drowning man, the fear, identifying with powerlessness, that's where it starts, right? Because those things, the darkness before the storm, you know, that dawn, the darkness before the dawn, it is that thing. It's the worst. I'm at that place. I'm at the jumping off point, right? I'm about to drown. And then because there's no way out in my world, but there's people out here that have found a way out and I can't find the door. And again, remember, I'm not an artist. Right? There's no door. And I've dug such a pit for myself. I'm down in this dark, ugly hole. And the way out is through the steps. But I don't even freaking know there's steps. Right? I'm down in this freaking hole thinking this is my life and this is where I'm going to die. And you guys, yeah. Woohoo! Hello. You show me the steps, right? And I'm like, I'm not going out there. I don't know that person. Who's that? Do they have dope? You know what I mean? I don't know how to use the steps. I don't know how to save my own life. I don't even know that I want to save my life. I'm just too scared to die. Right? And you come get me. You come to my darkness. You reach out to the newcomer. You go where they're at. You don't wait for them to come to you. They don't know how. Right? Don't wait for that newcomer to come up and say, hi, I need some help. You go get them. Because I don't care if they're sitting in this room or they're sitting in the alley. They don't know how to come to you. So you do what we do here. You go get them. And you show them how to use the steps to save their life. Right? You show them that there's light. And you show them that there's love. And you show them that they matter. And it's okay, whoever they think they are, it's okay. You still love them. Right? And we teach them those kinds of things. The paper, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And the path, it's the steps, right? Remember, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. We don't do this alone. There's one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. You could not give me God, right? But you show me the way to God. You show me the way to find a God of my understanding. You didn't say, here's God, take this, you got to have it. Nobody did that. It's good because I wouldn't have took it, right? And it goes on to say, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, right? There is a solution. If you are seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. We are placed in a position where life was becoming impossible, right? What happens next? We have but two alternatives to face. One is to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we can. And the other is to accept spiritual help. Right? That's how it works for addicts and alcoholics. We have two choices. Go ahead, live like you've been living. Die. Because that's what it comes down to. Jails, institutions, or death. And by the time I got here, I'd done all those. Right? I'd done all those. I died. Been incarcerated, you know? This is the way out. So if you're sitting here today, right? And it doesn't really matter if you're 30 days or 10 years, because at 16 years sober, I identify with powerlessness still today. And it was very important for me at 8 years sober for somebody to remind me what powerlessness looks like. Right? Because it looks much different on paper than it does in my head. Which is why we do some step work on paper, right? That's why we got to write that shit down. You know what I mean? Because it looks much different on paper than it does in my head. Because I'm real good at rationalizing, justifying, you know, that shit. I'm good at that. I can make it sound pretty. You know what I mean? Yeah. Okay. This is my example of powerlessness. Is my hope that some of you are able to identify with something that I've shared here today. I'm really grateful that all of you guys have came. And again, I'll just let you know that if you're interested in having a better diagram than this, and the readings that go along with that diagram, there's copies up here on the table. Thank you for letting me share.